Welcome. You're listening to the Mac Observer's Background Mode. This is your host, John Marcellaro. And this week, my guest is an encore visit by former Apple Senior Director of Product Marketing, Michael Gartenberg. Michael, welcome.
Hey, thanks for having me back.
Yeah, it's nice to have you on the show. So much has happened. The time has just flown. We had a great show. We recorded on June 22nd and it aired on July 5th, 2016. And we just gabbed and we ran out of time. And so we made a date to come back and finish up the discussion. And since then, so much has happened. So there is plenty to talk about, I am sure.
Yeah, the world has moved on quite a bit. And once again, Apple continues to evolve.
Yeah, ever-changing Apple. One of the things that I didn't get a chance to go into much detail with you last time was you were an Apple senior director of product marketing. I wasn't that high up. I was just a senior manager. And we both did product marketing, me when Unix first made the scene and Mac OS X in 2000, 2001. And people tend to think of marketing as what they see in TV ads, but there's so many deep layers to the technical field of marketing. So tell me, what specifically were you doing day to day, and what were some of the projects and tasks does a senior person in product marketing do when you're not doing the fancy TV ads, which is done by a whole different group, right? That's Marcom still, right?
Right. So marketing communications are the people that actually do the creative stuff. I mean, they make the commercials. They're the people who are on site, you know, with the 4K cameras. And those folks report in, or at least reported in, directly to Phil Schiller. Then you had some outside folks that would come in, you know, the creative agencies that would, you know, offer their opinions and things. And ultimately, those things would go through. And that's sort of the marketing that people would see. And, you know, that stuff ended up pretty much on, you know, Phil's desk. You know, marketing directors at Apple can do a whole lot of things because marketing at Apple is quite different. So a marketing director, for example, working on iPhone might spend their time figuring out what features should go into the next version of iOS, down to what is the naming product? How do you come up with a name like iPhone SE? And some of this stuff sounds pretty simple, but it's pretty detailed. My job, reporting into Phil, was to come up with marketing messaging so that the Apple messaging was consistent relative to the competition, and that when execs went out on the road, they would be able to answer questions. Likewise, it was the same thing for earnings. When earnings come down.
Did that involve briefing papers for executives so that they could read something on the plane?
Absolutely. And as well as talking points. And in general, just keeping track of the marketplace and how Apple came into it. It wasn't that different from my role as an analyst, except that my audience was two. It was basically Phil and Tim, as well as Greg Joswick, Jaws. And the other parts of my job were to contribute in across the board. The fun part of my position is because of the role I was in, I got to see everything. Everything at Apple was sort of compartmentalized. You're on a need-to-know basis. And fortunately, I was on a need-to-know everything. So I did get to sit on, slide reviews and, you know, product presentations, got involved in naming some products, and naming is absolutely hysterical. I mean, you start with one thing and you do 1,000 permutations just to make sure.
And were you involved with the iPhone SE?
Yeah, the iPhone SE was a tricky product. In fact, it was one of the last products I worked on, because what do you call the thing? Was it really an iPhone 5 Plus with all sorts of super features? Mm-hmm. Did it belong in the 6 line?
Bad message, because you didn't want to use the number 5, because people would go, oh, that was old stuff.
Right. And you didn't want to necessarily call it a 6 because, well, you know, 6, you know, did you call it maybe a 6C?
6 minus?
right? So because it was kind of this weird, weird product. And I can tell you there were meetings that went on for hours about this subject. One was I think it was called iPhone Classic, a little throwback to an homage to the Mac Classic, as well as, you know, defining the product that way. And in the end,
Classic, people would think, it has a black and white screen. I'm just kidding here.
There must have been 1,000 names, and there are these huge spider charts, where you're starting to, should we name it relative to, Greek gods or classic Mac stuff? Mm-hmm. And, that one I think was particularly difficult. But at the end of the day, SE seemed to work. One, it was, worked before.
What does that stand for? Is it special edition, as we surmise, or is it something else?
Yeah, I mean, it stands for nothing. It's one of those things.
It's like Honda Acura NXV, whatever.
Yeah, project whatever you want to it. Special edition, supremely engineered. But it was a way to position it into the lineup.
Slow evolution.
Right. Would there be a future version of this? Is this a product that's going to continue to exist online?
Is there going to be an iPhone S7 SE?
Yeah. I mean, remember, the whole idea of the SE was to come up with a relatively low-priced product that would bring the base onto the core technology of iOS 6 for developers to hit against. So you kind of had a target going forward, and you had a way to upgrade. I think what was interesting, and again, this was past my time being there with the introduction, was how popular this thing was. And I don't think anyone at Apple thought this was going to be a huge mainstream product. This was the low end. This was the cheapo. And you suddenly had this huge demand.
Wasn't the idea to increase sales volume, unit sales, by having a less expensive product?
Well, the idea was, you had less expensive products in the line. The idea was to create this less expensive product, move people off of the 5S who weren't going to pay for a 6 or didn't want the form factor. Mm-hmm. And this would sort of be that new low end, but it would bring people onto basically the 6 platform, because you don't want people to be too far behind at the low end, because you want developers to be able to target features. And if those features
security changes in the hardware too.
Right. Yeah. And look, if you don't have the processor architectures and, things like the M7 chip, then developers won't target it. They'll go for the least common denominator. So the idea was to kick this thing up. And then all of a sudden you had this demand from people who said, I want this. And what I think was funny about this is, I guess, the way the market reacts, in that, before iPhone 6 was launched, it was Apple is, losing credibility in the marketplace. Apple will build larger phones. Apple is missing out on this super important trend. What we want is larger phones, larger iPhones, larger iPhones. And then Apple introduces them, and they were hits, but then all of a sudden comes along the iPhone SE, and it's a runaway hit. So people are like, thank God Apple gave us back the small option. Yay!
Was that surprising, or was that done with forethought?
I believe, personally, in my humble opinion, that was not done with forethought. And the reason that, I can cite for you is just a post-Apple proof point, was these things were in huge demand. I mean, for a long time, you couldn't buy one, which seems to indicate that the, forecast for demand of this product was, this is not going to be so much. It's going to be more of a niche product for people who want to, upgrade into the cheapo. What I don't think Apple expected, and I certainly, could tell you this much, was no one thought people were going to downgrade their phones from a 6 or a 6 Plus to buy an SE, because they just wanted the small form factor.
Well, that really happened in quantity?
It's hard to say, because, again, I can't track inventory, but I can tell you anecdotally it was true. I can tell you it was true for me. I dropped my 6S Plus to an SE because I really liked the one-handed form factor. And even though I was being constrained by, memory. I couldn't, stuff everything that I wanted to in there. But it was great. And for a long time, I debated, going to a 7 or not going to a 7. And I finally did. Yeah, so I think it was a surprise to Apple that people were downgrading from the 6 form factor to the SE, which is kind of unusual. And I can say anecdotally, I was one of those people. I liked the smaller form factor, and I was willing to live with the 64 gigabyte constraint just to be able to go back to one-handed use. And, while I finally moved to a 7, mostly because of the 256 gigabyte storage, if Apple were to come out with that smaller form factor with, something like the dual camera that's on the, 7 Plus and give me some decent memory capacity, I would absolutely go to that form factor in a heartbeat. It's one-handed. I don't like bigger phones. And I think there is definitely a marketplace of people that want that. And the problem is you can't prove it, at least from the Android experience, because no one Android vendor makes a phone in that form factor. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. Should there be a, March event like there was last year, will we see an upgrade of the iPhone SE into more modern technology? And, where Apple could take that line. But I think it was a surprise to, exactly how much of a hit this thing was. And the idea of people downgrading their technology to this form factor, going back a generation from the S to the 6, probably was like, wait, what is going on here? First, they told us to build big phones, and we built right. big phones, and then the small phone came in, and they go, yay, Apple's building small phones again. So
this goes to show you need a broad market to appeal to a broad audience.
Yeah, I mean, you never want to be in the position of, the king who looks down from his palace and the people are marching, goes, I need to find out, where these people want to go so I can lead them. And that's never been Apple's position. It's always been, we know what you want even before you want it. So I think the SE was a little bit of a surprise. I doubt any Apple exec would ever go on the record. It'll always be, yeah, sure. That's exactly what we planned.
Let me ask you about another naming issue that just came up. In the Q1 2017 earnings report on the 31st of January, Tim Cook used a term we've never heard. In September, Apple came out with the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar. And he called it the MacBook Touch in the earnings report in his preparatory remarks. And I've never heard anybody talk about it. I've never heard anybody write an article say, what was he saying? No explanation. Do you have any clue about what Tim was thinking?
Yeah, I heard that too. I suspect it was a throwaway in terms of description, because saying something like, MacBook Pro with Touch Bar is a little awkward, bit of a mouthful. So I think he abbreviated it there. I've never heard any exec talk about it with that particular name. So I suspect it was just a throwaway and a way also to distinguish it. Yeah, and a way to distinguish it from, the MacBook Pro that doesn't have the, Touch Bar. But at a certain point, these are becoming mouthfuls. And we'll see what Apple, does with those things going forward.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe it should have been MacBook Touch to start with. I don't know.
Yeah, and the problem with MacBook Touch then is it connotes a device with a touch screen.
Oh, yeah, so, and it loses its pro connotation. Yeah.
Right. So then you call it, MacBook Pro Touch, and I think Touch sets a different set of expectations. And, I suspect this one probably started off with, MacBook Pro and then went to a billion permutations and came back to MacBook Pro. I mean, I remember when MacBook was introduced, and you had this, you know, fantastic revolutionary technology for the time, you know, super thin, a 12-inch screen in an 11-inch, you know, form factor, the new keyboard, the amazing touch, you know, touchpad and, you know, the force touch associated with it. I mean, what do you call this thing? You know, is it, you know, MacBook, you know, sliver, MacBook Blade, MacBook Razor, you know, all sorts of you know, different things, you know, MacBook Apollo, MacBook Zeus. And at the end of the day, it came back to, well, MacBook.
Well, I got to take a break. Can we take a break right now? Sure. I got to get my commercial in here, and then we'll come back and we'll continue the discussion about what you were doing. And then there's some other recent Apple events I want to ask you about. Folks, we'll be back in 60 seconds. Stay with us.
Hello there, all you fabulous Background Mode listeners. I'm Kelly Gamont with the Mac Observer, and I just want to say a few words about how you can support all the things we do. If you're thinking about buying something from Apple, Amazon, or Mac Mall, just go to the Mac Observer's homepage where we have a section called Support TMO, or you can just enter macobserver.com/Apple Store, all one word, and that will take you to our special page for Apple and our other affiliates. If you make a purchase from one of our partners this way, the Mac Observer receives a small compensation for sending business their direction. Pretty cool, right? And you don't pay a penny more. This small fee from our affiliates helps us continue to bring you TMO's daily news, reviews, tips, how-tos, and podcasts like this one. So the next time you're thinking about an online purchase, come to TMO's homepage and support the Mac Observer. Thanks. Back to you, John.
Thank you, Kelly. I'm chatting with Michael Gartenberg. Michael, so what else can you tell me about, like, your day-to-day events, or kind of like what your life was like at Apple? You talked before about, you know, briefing papers and naming conventions. Was there anything else that comes to mind that was kind of interesting or fun or taxing?
So before I go on, first of all, like, seriously, folks, support the Mac Observer. It doesn't cost you anything. You're buying the stuff anyhow. And if you want to keep, like, high quality stuff like this going and it doesn't cost you anything, come on, do it. Sorry.
Hey,
my little endorsement there. So day to day was very different. You know, Apple is a place where you're expected to know what to do. Without a lot of guidance, you know, the your new day orientation, you know, in some places it can be like 3 days of an offsite, was about half a day. And I think most of that was devoted to, you know, don't talk about Apple.
Right. But we're a giant organization. We're under constant attack. Be quiet.
Basically, it's, you know, sort of like, you know, just remember where you work and, you know, shut up. But the other parts of it were definitely sort of interesting. I remember the IT guy getting up and talking about, you know, IT, and basically said, look, when you get back to your office, there's going to be a computer there. Figure out how to make it work. And then he held up a power adapter and said, this is a power adapter. I do not have any more of these. If you lose yours or forget it at home, go buy a new one, steal one, borrow one, but don't call me. And the idea at Apple is you're just supposed to know what to do, and how to do it and when to deliver it without a lot of guidance. And at least that's the way it was for me.
Were you creating a lot of documents?
You know, you're creating a lot of documents, you're answering demands, and the idea is to know who needs what, when they need it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the one thing I can say about Apple is, you know, precision. You know, we look at their products and we talk about the details of the packaging and the, you know, every, you know, ounce of it, and even talking about, you know, the new campus and design and attention to focus. Well, that's true about work life at Apple too. I remember the first day I was there, I sent an email to someone and she sent it back, you know, with her response. And at the end of it, she put a little PS and said, by the way, spelling counts here. I had spelled the word the HTE.
I saw Renee Ritchie do a TEH the other day. So,
yeah, so that'll give you the notion of detail. one thing, and you know, anyone at Apple listening, I hope I'm not violating anything confidential here. If you never see me again, you know what happened.
Okay.
you know, like black helicopters. But, you know, it comes to a review process. Anyone who's ever worked in an organization, I mean, you've worked in places where you've had, you know, your performance review.
Oh, yeah.
What's your experience with the performance review? I'm just, you know, like, what did you go through?
Well, it was primarily at Lockheed Martin, a little bit of it at Apple, not so formal at Apple. It was sort of a preliminary period of evaluation. I almost got fired from Apple because I talked about how there was going to be a terminal app in Mac OS X when it first shipped. And I thought, you know, it was kind of like my job as marketing manager to tell those things to Unix customers. Well, it was the product manager's role, not mine. So I got a note from my boss that said, Phil Schiller is really upset, but don't worry. I kept him from firing you. So,
yeah. So when I was at Gartner, your performance review, you know, started with a whole process of, you know, self-evaluation and then setting goals and then your boss setting goals and reviewing mm-hmm. your stuff. And it took days and hours. When I worked at Jupiter Research, the review process was so absurd that you often knew what your salary increase was well before you even completed your performance review. So it comes to Apple and it's time for, you know, performance reviews and people are talking about it. And I see there's like, you know, a thing on my calendar for Phil, who's my boss, for like 5 minutes. What? So I remember talking to Jaws and saying, you know, Jaws, what's up with
Greg
this?
Joswiak,
like, you know, right. Yeah, Greg Joswiak, who has now taken on a lot of Phil Schiller's responsibilities. Awesome guy. I've known him for 20 years. Hey, Jaws, if you're listening. So I asked Jaws, who was sort of, you know, a little bit of a mentor to me, trying to guide me through, you know, Apple until you kind of grok the place. And I said, what's up with this? Like 5 minutes? And he goes, yeah, Phil was bugged by HR because he wasn't meeting with people. So HR made him, you know, take 5 minutes for everyone. He goes, used to be, we just got our performance reviews, like a little slip of paper under the door.
You're either fired or you show up to work tomorrow.
Yeah. With basically, you know, here's your salary increase, here's your bonus, and here's your restricted stock unit.
Yeah, that's the thing about Apple. If you're in trouble, you know it right away and you're gone right away. So if you show up to work the next day, nothing bad has happened. Assume everything's okay.
Right. You know, if my badge works, I'm good.
Yeah.
And Josh said to me, if you don't know by yourself how you're doing, you don't belong here. If you have to wait a year for someone to set goals for you or to tell you, you know, give you feedback, he goes, you don't belong here. You know,
that can be cool. That can be cool.
Right? Yeah. Every day is your performance review. And he said, by the way, you've got 5 minutes with Phil. Don't take up more than two. I'm getting annoyed. That is Apple. You're expected to be at the top of your game. You're expected to know what to do, who to do it for. And there's a lot of pressure because, you know, you have kind of two things, one, accuracy and timeliness. If someone needs something, and you're a day late, well, even if it was the best thing in the world, it was useless. You know, you're dead to me. And if it was,
we got to move on.
On time, right. It was on time. It was on time and it wasn't, you know, perfect. Well, you're also dead to me. So, a detailed work environment. Think of an Apple product and then translate it into a work environment. Then you know what we're talking about.
Yep. Well, since we talked last, which was last summer, we had the famous or infamous October 27th event called Hello Again. And this was a take on the original Apple Mac event, Hello, and then the iMac Hello Again event. And everybody thought, okay, we've gone the whole year. We haven't had any new Mac Pros, no new Mac Minis, no new iMacs, no new MacBook Pros. What's going to happen in this event? And then so they came out with a MacBook Pro with the Touch Bar, and we thought, oh, that's cool. And then nothing else stopped. End. And we were kind of left hanging, like, you know, well, it's a hello again event. Where are all the other Macs you've been designing and building and ready to announce to us? And then the day before, Microsoft announced its glorious Surface Studio, basically, euphemistically, a 27-inch iPad running Windows 10 and touch-sensitive display. And so there was a lot of fuss about that at the end of 2016. What was your take on that?
Yeah, it was, you know, there was a lot of expectations. My son graduated at the in the spring of 2016, and we were giving him a new Mac Pro he wanted for his graduation gift. And he goes, I don't want one of these current ones. I'm going to hold off. I want to see the new one. And the new ones came out. It was sort of like, I'm not in a hurry to buy. It's just, keep that, coupon good for future purchases. And I think there was a lot of disappointment in terms of the device. And part of it goes to, who was it meant for? It's MacBook Pro. Was it this quote unquote pro and creative market? Was it for a mainstream market? What were the differentiators in this, new device other than form factor, this little, touch bar? And the day before, Microsoft had introduced this thing called Surface Studio, this basically giant desktop computer that could, hinge down.
It was seismic.
Yeah. And, Surface Style, you could put on the screen and interact with it. Mm-hmm. And, a pen is integral and part of the experience.
Do you think Apple held off? Do you think they changed their plan for the keynote the next day based on that? Or do you think they were just going to try to slide with the MacBook Pro with Touch Bar and leave it?
Well, I think, at a certain point, it's too late. It was interesting because there was this notion of Apple, we were expecting an announcement on one day and that could move to the other day. And then, the Microsoft announcement. And I suspect Apple had enough time to move it to be after Microsoft, not before, because you want to be, the thing people are talking about in the news cycle. Mm-hmm. You want to kill the cycle before. but you had this Surface Studio. And again, Windows has evolved. Windows 10 is really good. Windows 10 does bridge the gap between a traditional personal computer and a tablet. It doesn't require you to use a touchscreen, so you don't have that famed gorilla arm of holding your screen
but
up.
But it does work if you want it to.
Right. Yeah. There's a lot of advantage in terms of Windows, in terms of particularly Microsoft devices, where you have, tablets that are also PCs like Surface. You have PCs that can become tablets like Surface Studio. And, Microsoft has managed to bridge the gap. We're not talking about, in my opinion, a toaster fridge anymore. We're talking more about a refrigerator freezer. Microsoft is working very hard now to capture the, inspirations, capture the aspiration of people.
So is Hewlett Packard. I installed Windows 10 on the Z2 Mini over the weekend, and it was glorious.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty good. I think there's still some issues in terms of apps, but it's almost the flip side when Apple used to talk about in the 90s and say, we don't have as many apps as, Windows 95, but we have the apps that you need. And Microsoft is saying, we don't have, the app catalog that Apple does for, tablet computing, but you have the entire catalog of Windows applications, no fake Photoshop,
With Windows being touch sensitive, it's not relegated to the past like Mac OS, which will never be touch enabled, I don't think.
Exactly. And Microsoft is basically giving you, it's not just the two-in-one in the sense of tablet and PC. It's two-in-one in the sense of we have this tablet and touch-optimized environment for Windows, but we also have the full desktop Windows should you need to go back to that for legacy applications. And it took Microsoft a long time to get here, but it's a legitimate strategy, and their hardware shows exactly what they can do. So you have this, Surface mm-hmm. Studio and Surface Style, for the creatives. You have Surface Book, which is, your PC that can also function as a tablet when you need it. And you have Surface, which is a tablet that can also be a PC. So it's a great line. I think you're doing a good job. telling this particular story. And, you know, whenever people talk about pen, you know, Microsoft's vision of pen has changed. You don't need the pen to use Windows, but you can do an awful lot of things with it that most people would want to do beyond, you know, drawing and sketching, including things like note-taking, annotating, marking up documents. There's an awful lot of people who can use the pen that Microsoft is beginning to attract to. So you kind of had this, you know, interesting event, and you know, what shook me a little bit was the birth video when they showed, you know, the product and you know, how it was created and came about. And you looked at it and go, wow, the only thing this is missing is Johnny Ive's voice. you know, this is, you know, one. Yeah, I mean, this is pretty good.
What's startling was that there was a clear vision, a clear idea, a clear message, a clear intent to create a specific product for a specific market and to create a sense of excitement and inspiration, as you said. And yeah, that took everybody by surprise.
And the cool part of the aspiration is, okay, you don't want to buy that thing. You want it, but it's not what you want to suggest. Can't need it. But Microsoft said, hey, you know what? We're going to bring things like the Surface Style down to, you know, Surface Book and as well as Surface. And if you look at something like the Surface Pro 4, that's almost a mini Surface Studio. So, you know, the studio may bring you into the store, but you may walk out with, you know, a Surface Book or a Surface 4. And it's clear that Microsoft, as well as Microsoft's partners, are going after this creative marketplace.
Hewlett-Packard told me specifically they are too. So yeah, they're ganging up on Apple.
Yeah. And while, you know, the creative marketplace is relatively small to the rest of the industry, it's a huge sense of aspiration. I want to do that.
It's technically influential too. When certain right. people like NASA, astronauts or other technical people or senior laboratory people have these things on their desk, it sends a message.
I mean, Apple had this magic. I remember, you know, sitting in Apple keynotes, good example, in the introduction of GarageBand, and they had John Mayer, I believe, out there. And, you know, it was one of the, you know, spokespeople. And then, of course, he showed us using the product. And then, you know, he was the musical guest. And I'm sitting there thinking, the only difference between me and him, according to Steve, is a copy of GarageBand. That's it. Like, give me that. The only difference between me and George Lucas is a copy of iMovie. there was that notion of aspiration. So even if I never hit that level, I was with the cool crowd. I was mm-hmm. aspiring to do more. I was aspiring to create. And Apple's message was always going into to the idea of the creative consumer, because that's important. You know, consumers, by definition, just consume. They don't create. Most people don't create. They are consumers. So this idea that I could become creative is important. So on one hand, you're capturing the real creative market. And on the other hand, you're creating this aspirational notion of exactly. Look at all these things you can do. And then Apple letting you do them. I mean, GarageBand did bring some of the stuff down to the mainstream. iPhoto, iMovie, all did these things. And to me, this is where Microsoft is looking. You look at their commercials, they're creating the sense of aspiration. Their holiday commercial, which was, you know, multicultural and showing people on the creative side and everything else. I mean, if you haven't seen it, look it up on YouTube.
Yeah, their ads have really grown up.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The first time I saw that ad, it was like, this easily could have come out of Apple Marcom if they would just take the Surface stuff out of it. It was brilliant. It was beautiful. There are a lot of people at Microsoft who are saying, here is our opportunity. And I think part of the battle is around the idea of touch. Microsoft saying touch is a way of interacting with things directly on screen. It's not required for use. It enhances use. The pen isn't required to use. It enhances use, almost like Apple's message for Pencil. And, you know, macOS takes on more and more attributes of iOS every iteration, you know, there's this emphasis now on full screen apps as opposed to Windows. I mean, little windows are available and you want to work that way, but there's a strong emphasis on, you know, full screen applications. The trackpad is Apple's answer to touch. I mean, the same gestures that work on your phone, you know, pinch to zoom and swipe, work on your trackpad as well. We have this, you know, touch bar, which integrates touch without interfering with the screen. But one of the things I kept hearing from, like, you know, really good, strong Apple loyalist creatives, you know, people like Rene Ritchie and Serena Cult was saying, you know, Microsoft has made a case for a touch Mac. The ability to interact directly on the screen. So when I look at the touch bar and I see things like, you know, oh, look, there's little, you know, icons of, you know, tiny little, you know, pictures of my photo library that I can swipe through. I want to do that on screen. I want to take my hand, I put it on screen, I want to swipe it. I don't want to use this little strip, and I don't necessarily want to use the trackpad. There are times when I really could interact with the screen, especially because Apple taught us how to do that. They taught us pinch to zoom. They taught us
Microsoft swipe gestures. Seizing the vision in an unusual event.
Yeah. So, it's not like Microsoft is going to, you know, overtake Apple in terms of whatever. And remember, Microsoft still makes a hell of a lot of money doing a whole lot of other things. But the idea of Microsoft kind of getting its mojo back, you know, I looked at those devices and I'm going, wow, I look at something like Surface Book and I say, hey, this is a really powerful device. I can get a really powerful GPU in it with the new, you know, power base, whatever they call it, which is something I can't get from Apple. I do have this device that can be both, you know, traditional computer, but if I, you know, pull off the screen, it goes into a tablet mode where I can use it for, you know, tablet functionality and doing things. I mean, it's not going to last me more than 4 or 5 hours, but it's not designed to be your primary tablet. So to me, that there's a sense of like, wow, there's some innovation here. Surface Pro 4, you're seeing a lot of innovation here and kind of thinking outside of what a traditional clamshell PC or traditional desktop is with Studio. And I think that's what people are sort of looking for Apple to do. So when, you know, the MacBook Pro came out, it was sort of like, well, okay, you know, there's a great story of a, you know, grandmother who's walking with her kid along the beach, and all of a sudden this giant wave comes along and sweeps the kid out into the ocean. And, you know, grandmother like falls on her knees and says, you know, God, please give me my grandson back. I'll do anything that I want. You know, this is mercy, etc. And then a giant wave comes back and sweeps him back, you know, into her arms, and she hugs him. And then she looks up to the sky and she says to God, you know, he had a hat. And
we're gonna have to wrap it up there.
So yeah, so to me it was sort of like, I think people were saying to Apple, these things are great, and let's be clear, MacBook Pros are awesome, or MacBooks Pro are awesome. Yeah. But I think people were saying, I want the hat.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're out of time. We've done it again. We've gabbed and had a great time, and it's been really great fun. Thanks for joining me in this encore performance, and it was so much fun. So thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I love doing this. I wish we had another hour, and nice. I hope you'll bring me back again soon, and we can have a little more fun because things are happening. And yes, once absolutely. Again, Apple, yeah. While we speak today, I'm just looking. Apple stock has hit an all-time high. So, you know, for all the naysayers, Apple's doing something right.
Yeah, they are. Folks, I hope you enjoyed this wonderful discussion with Michael Gartenberg. And we'll see you next week on the Mac Observer's Background Mode.